Welcome to Climate Matters. We're here with Eleanor Stein, adjunct professor at Albany Law School and our guest today. In our last segment, we were discussing climate change science, some of the daunting issues we face as a society, as a people, and we began to talk about federal and state action and inaction. We went through some of the issues in terms of progress made under the Obama administration, and we just began to address some of the challenges that we're now failing to face or actually backing off from facing in terms of where the Trump administration is going. So welcome again. Thank you, Eleanor.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. So I spoke earlier about the Clean Power Plan, which was really the heart of the Obama approach to climate change. Although during his administrations, he also blocked new oil and gas exploration in the Arctic, made a climate deal with China, set the first regulations for coal ash, a harmful byproduct of coal mining, and set standards for automobile emissions, as well as the Clean Power Plan, which had to do with the generation of electricity, a key issue. So that whole panoply of actions was in the crosshairs for the Trump administration from the minute Trump took office. And I think his very first action had to do with rolling back the limits on coal ash and other waste products from coal mining. But so far, and we're only 2 years into it, Trump has done 112 actions to roll back climate regulation. 8 executive orders, 80 actions through administrative agencies, and 112 including actions by Congress. And these were either to delay the Obama-era regulations taking effect or to roll back rules that had already taken effect. And every one of these, or almost every one of these, has been challenged in court. And this is where the role of the courts becomes very important. In many of these cases, people have been successful in challenging the rollback and at least slowing down the kind of juggernaut action of the Trump administration to basically free up coal mining, free up methane emissions, free up all of these the sources for greenhouse gases that we know have had these devastating impacts. So it's not only an ideology that climate change is a myth, it's also the very real nuts and bolts of putting more and more wealth in the pockets of the fossil fuel industry and essentially implementing a fossil fuel agenda. And that is the agenda that we're seeing. So this is a brutal assault on laws that have been passed and have been made and on the health and well-being of our country and the planet. But the most hopeful thing that's going on in response is not what's happening at the federal government, but to recast our thinking and look at what's going on at the state level and at the city level, and even at the community level. Mm-hmm. And this is where we really have hope for the future.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we recently had a guest who is developing something called the Hope Solar Farm, community solar, an opportunity available to people. But some of the hope that we want to talk about here today is tapping into your expertise, and that is, so in terms of actions you're describing at the state and local level, what examples would you share with us to that help actually put some effort and propulsion behind that hope?
Okay. You know, Emory Lovins calls it applied hope. Yep. That's his description of his form of optimism. He runs the Rocky Mountain Institute, one of probably the longest standing organizations for furthering energy efficiency and renewable energy. So, you know, June 2017, Trump announces that he's pulling the United States out of the Paris Accord. The next day, New York, California, and I think 13 other states announced the formation of what they call the U.S. Climate Alliance. And they've been joined by other states since then. And these are states that pledged that they themselves would take up the burden of the Paris Accord, and that within these states, they would continue policies aggressively to meet and even exceed the goals of the Paris Agreement. And so they have made great strides in the last 2 years.
And those strides that many states have made are quite impressive. We'll get into that in just a moment. Just to remind listeners, you're listening to Climate Matters. Our guest today is Eleanor Stein. So some of the steps being taken at the state level, can you provide an indication, some examples of that?
Sure. Let me start right here at home in New York.
Please.
Governor Cuomo actually just announced an increase in the ambition of our plan to increase the amount of renewable energy that we build and produce in New York State. So the current state target, I believe, is a 70% of our electric generation should be from renewable resources like solar power and wind power by the year 2030, which is a very tough target to meet, but the state is mobilizing to meet that target as fast as possible. That means building solar farms, as they're called, or wind farms, really hundreds of them, large and small. Your rooftop is part of this effort. And the importance of centering on the production of electricity is that there is a path, it's called the Deep Decarbonization Pathway, for this country and many other countries to actually attain carbon neutrality or zero carbon or close to it by the middle of this century, which is the climate scientists and thought leaders' view of the minimum that's necessary for us to do to combat the pace of climate change. You know, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the global science body, tells us that we have 10 to 12 years to make profound changes in how we get electricity and how we do transportation and many other parts of our society in order to prevent irreversible changes in things like the melting of the Greenland ice sheet.
So the central focus on the power sector and the provision of clean electricity, decarbonizing the electric grid, I think most of us could follow that. What are the connections? How do we stitch together how we broaden that decarbonization to other sectors of the economy?
So the what's called the Deep Decarbonization Pathway for us begins with decarbonizing electricity, which is, oddly enough, relatively easy. We know how to do it. There's no technological obstacle. And in fact, those resources are now cheaper than most fossil fuel resources. So we have the economics on our side. But as that process gets underway, we can begin to power other parts of our economy with electricity. So let's electrify transportation. Let's have electric cars. Let's have electric buses. Let's have more public transportation. And not just rely on individual cars. But electricity, if it's decarbonized, presents us with an opportunity to make those changes in transportation and similar changes in home heating, in cooking, in industrial processes that now use oil or other fuels, gasoline, other fuels that are fossil fuels, can be powered with electricity. And that's our vision.
Mm. So these steps in terms of decarbonizing the grid and broadening that, in terms of the deep decarbonization, does that occur in a sequence, or is there some parallel track, or what is the vision?
The vision is that, as with any crisis, we have to do everything all at once.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, we've already begun decarbonizing electricity, and, New York State has probably about 26% of its electricity now is generated from renewable resources. Most of that, almost all of that, comes from big hydropower dams up on the Canadian border. But many other states are far more advanced in their solar and wind. California, Massachusetts, Hawaii, certainly far ahead of us. And the rest of the world, many other countries are far ahead. But as we increase the amount of reliance on sources like wind and solar, in order to do that, we need to be able to use those resources, that electricity, when it's produced. So the more applications we have for, let's say, solar-powered electricity at the time that it's produced, the more successful we will be in decarbonizing the society and keeping that moving.
Great. Well, thank you, Eleanor. We've been discussing deep decarbonization as an avenue and a vision to getting us to a future where the environment and our children and grandchildren's future is protected, a stronger economy as well. Thank you very much, Eleanor.